Iowa is going a little gray. One out of every four Iowans is a baby boomer approaching their 60s or 70s. People 85 and over make up one of the fastest growing segments of our population. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Today, Iowa Week continues with growing old in Iowa. We'll talk about what makes this a great place to age and some of the challenges that come along with an aging population. I'll talk with anthropologist Alana Bush about some of the keys to well-being in later life, sociologist Dave Peters about the implications of our aging population, and John Hale, advocate on aging and caregiving issues. We also want to hear from you. Join the conversation after the news.
Support for IPR and this podcast comes from Luther College, offering more than 60 areas of study, including the new data science and neuroscience majors, dedicated to preparing students for success in a changing world.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. This is Iowa Week, and our theme this week is Iowa, a place to grow. This hour, we're going to focus on growing old in Iowa, something a large percentage of our population is doing. One out of every four Iowans is part of the baby boomer generation, and the youngest baby boomers are now in their mid-50s. This hour, we'll talk about Iowa's changing demographics and the challenges that creates. We'll also talk about some of the keys to well-being as we grow old, and we're going to start with some positive press for the state. You may have noticed that Iowa often shows up on the lists of the best state to retire in or to grow old in. The emphasis is usually on quality of life or on cost of living, but a new list ranks us as the second best state to grow old in, looking at some different criteria. The study was released by Caring.com, an online resource for family caregivers. Tim Sullivan is vice president of Caring.com, and I asked Tim what criteria he used to compile this list.
Well, what we wanted to look at were factors that drove quality of life for folks, not just at the point that they retire, but as they grow old. So we looked at the self-reported well-being of people in their 70s and 80s. We also looked at the quality of the nursing communities in the state, the reviews of senior services, of consumers who use those services online. And we rolled those up into an overall quality ranking, and we also looked at the costs of those services to drive the ultimate ranking of the best states to grow old.
So when we're talking about these studies or these lists, most of the time we're looking at, oh, right when you retire, when your health's still good, when you can get out and about and take advantage of things in your community. That's the kind of thing that most of these lists tend to look at. But you're looking a little further down the road when it becomes harder to get out and about and you're going to need a little help.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. As we age, our needs change, our capabilities, you know, it's a reality that our capabilities diminish, and the availability of services and support in your community can make a big difference to how happy and comfortable you are when you reach that point in life.
So Iowa came in second on your list. Utah, according to the things you looked at, was the best state to grow old in. Iowa was number two. What were some of the things that made Iowa look good?
Well, what's interesting about both Utah and Iowa is that they were not quite tops in anything, but they were strong across the board, you know, top 10, top 15 for all of the rankings. And they came in at Iowa 8th for quality and 17th for cost. And the combination of those two things put you guys at number two. This is different from the number four ranking, South Carolina, where they had pretty good quality, where they came in 22nd, but their cost was really good. And the inverse from Washington, where the cost was 38th of all states, but they were number one in care. Iowa was just strong across both things, not quite at the top, but in both cases, they were really solid. One place where Iowa does stand out is the number of truly excellent assisted living communities, as ranked by our website's Caring Stars program. They were number fourth for having a large number of truly, truly top top-notch facilities and communities.
Recently, on Talk of Iowa, we've talked about how many people desire to age in place and some of the services available for people who want to stay in their own homes. Did you look at that as well?
We looked at the amount of support that's available for family caregivers. Caregiving is something that often happens to us as we age, you know, because a spouse suddenly is not able to care for themselves and we're thrust into that role. Obviously, if you can find support when you're in that role, it helps you have a better chance of staying in your own home. We also looked at the cost of in-home care services, because obviously the affordability and quality of the services that come to you in your home can help affect your ability to age in place.
With the states that were closer to the bottom of your list, what were some of the big trouble spots that you saw?
As with the top five, it's a little bit of a mixed bag. At the bottom was West Virginia, and while there the cost of care there was relatively affordable, where they came in 13th, the quality rankings were just towards the bottom, and that's largely the case with the bottom five. Indiana follows a similar pattern. New York, though, which came in at 48th. It was a little bit different in that their quality was 34th, but their cost was 48th. So unlike with some other states where you see an understandable trade-off between those two rankings, New York just came in the bottom half for both.
Interesting. And so with Iowa, again, being a state without a high population, which is something that a lot of people enjoy here in Iowa, no matter what stage of life they're in, that probably was one of the big factors in keeping the costs relatively low, but the quality quite high.
Yeah, that is a reasonable thing about which to speculate. The study doesn't look at that directly, but that is a sensible theme, especially when you look at Utah, which is number one, and is similarly sparsely populated.
Well, Tim, thank you so much for talking with me today.
Yeah, it was my pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Tim Sullivan, Vice President of Caring.com. They published a report ranking Iowa as the second best state to grow old. And of course, that was a rosy report on growing old in Iowa. There are many challenges that we face as this population ages in the state of Iowa. And of course, a lot of people individually face challenges as they age in terms of well-being, in terms of happiness. And there are a lot of different factors that contribute to well-being and happiness. Alana Bush has studied many of those factors. She's an assistant professor of anthropology at the University of Iowa. She's also the author of Staying Alive in America. And she is here with me now. Alana Bush, thank you for being here.
Thank you for having me.
And at this point in time, I've mentioned how the population of Iowa is aging rapidly. A quarter of our population is over the age of 54. So this is a kind of a unique phenomenon in Iowa, but it's not just unique to Iowa. As a nation, we are seeing people living longer. This vital baby boomer generation is headed into old age everywhere. So this is a phenomenon you're observing all over the place.
It's a global phenomenon. So it's happening in Iowa, it's happening across the United States, and it's happening in many places across the world. And a lot of the time, the news reports it as a kind of crisis. We talk about the aging tsunami or the graying crisis and things like that. But I also think it's really exciting. You know, never before in human history have this many people lived this long. So we have a whole new stage of life that many people and their families are able to experience. And so one of my hopes is that we'll think about it as an opportunity, as an exciting new experience that people are having, and approach it that way.
Now, your research focuses on relationships that people develop as they grow old. And of course, our social circle changes as we get older.
Yeah. So social scientists have known for a while that as we grow older, people tend to invest more energy in relationships that are positive and matter to them. That's one of the sort of psychological changes that many people experience as they grow older. But that doesn't mean they only invest in relationships they've already had for a long time. It also means that they build new relationships, sometimes with paid care workers, sometimes with new romantic partners, or with people in their community. And so as people's social circles change, finding new relationships that are meaningful can be an important part of a well-being in later life.
Well, and this is one of the new newer things about this aging phenomenon. Of course, in the olden days, as people aged, they depended on their family. But families are scattered. And so we do see many more people moving into assisted living or retirement communities, that kind of thing. And they have to forge new relationships, right?
Right, both with each other and with the professional staff at those institutions. So we see and we also see that when people don't move into assisted living, but they remain at home and, you know, for many reasons, their families might be far away or just working a lot and unable to be around as much as the older adult might need them. And so they're hiring home care workers to come into the home. But those are also those new relationships.
So what about those relationships intrigues you? What have you been trying to find out about them?
I'm interested in the ways that people who come from both generationally different, but also come from very different backgrounds, find a way to get along, and the ways that the skills that home care workers use to make sure that the older adult that they work with continues to feel like the person that they've always been. That turns out to be something that many older adults care a lot about. One of the reasons they want to stay in familiar settings and stay at home is that this is one of the ways that they can continue to feel like themselves, have the things around them that are familiar, eat the kinds of foods that are familiar. And home care workers go from home to home and need to learn to reproduce those ways of life, which turns out to be more complicated than it sounds.
Yeah, tell me some of the factors that go into that for a home care worker. I mean, you mentioned, of course, where you live and what you eat, but I can imagine it is uniquely different for every person.
So home care workers talked about they talked about things like working with both hands, or they talk about things like being where the other person is, being where the older adult they take care of is. So a lot of what their skill is empathy, is not just empathy about imagining how someone else feels, but imagining what their body, what it's like to live in that person's body, what and they're trying to do that while they combine trying to reproduce that person's familiar experience with protecting their health. So often that means figuring out how to cook a dish with the right amount of salt that someone will still enjoy but won't affect their health, or pour a bath that's hot enough to make someone feel comfortable but not so hot to burn their skin. They're constantly both thinking about, you know, how to reproduce someone's familiar ways of life and protect their health at the same time, which turns out to be pretty demanding.
I can only imagine. Plus, this is not a field that's particularly high paid. So there's some conflict there as well, right?
This is one of the most poorly paid and poorly compensated jobs in the country. So the wages are typically minimum wage or just a little higher than that. Most home care workers don't earn they don't have any sick leave or other paid leave. And very few of them are able to get health insurance through their companies. So they're often struggling themselves to care for themselves and their families. And that tension can make it very hard for them to provide the kind of care that they want to provide. And it also has led to really high turnover rates in the industry.
Which I'm sure the longitudinal care can be incredibly valuable for somebody, having the same home health care worker over a long period of time. I mean, that's an investment in a relationship. So losing them again and again must be a real source of stress, too.
It can be very stressful for a lot of older adults. Well, I worked with older adults who didn't think that their home care worker was as good as they could be, but didn't want to ask for a different one because that transition
right.
can be very challenging.
We're going to take a short break. We'll be back in just a moment. I'm talking with Alana Bush. She is an assistant professor of anthropology at the University of Iowa. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio.
Support for IPR and this podcast comes from Luther College, offering more than 60 areas of study, including the new data science and neuroscience majors, dedicated to preparing students for success in a changing world.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. This hour, we're talking about growing old in Iowa. Our population is aging rapidly. That brings with it some opportunities. That also brings with it a lot of challenges. We'd love to hear your thoughts. Is this part of your experience? What are your biggest concerns as you grow old in Iowa? 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. With me right now is Alana Bush. She is assistant professor of anthropology at the University of Iowa, author author of Staying Alive in America. And Alana, we were talking about your focus on looking at the relationships that older people develop with their caregivers. In Iowa, of course, we have, in particular in our rural areas, we have a lot of people who are aging without necessarily a younger population there to support them. What are some of the big challenges that you see for caregivers and the older people in rural areas?
So I think rural areas struggle to find caregivers if younger people have moved away. And when paid workers work in these communities, they often have clients in very far-flung parts of, you know, they could be 10 or 20 miles apart. So just to manage scheduling and making sure that they can be where they need to be can be challenging. I think for older adults, it can be isolating to have a home care worker who lives that far away. And if the social support network has frayed, that can be a real challenge for people.
All right. You've also, this is not the focus of your research, but you've also done a lot of reading about romantic relationships that older people develop late in life. Of course, many people have lost a spouse. Of course, we also have a high divorce rate, so people are living on their own. And that's something that a lot of children of older people can be really uncomfortable with, but it can be a tremendous source of comfort and enrichment for people, right?
Absolutely. I mean, as I talked about earlier, older people tend to invest heavily in relationships that matter a lot to them, including new romantic relationships, which can provide companionship. People can share experiences, social support, meeting each other's friends, things like that. So it can expand social support networks where they have maybe gotten smaller. But some of the things that the research says are really interesting, including that what people are looking for in these relationships changes quite a bit in later life. So when you're not looking for a partner to raise children with, the kinds of things you start looking for, do you like the same kinds of hobbies? Those kinds of things change, and I think that's interesting. It also turns out that men and women are maybe looking for somewhat different things in later life. So the research suggests that older women are less likely to want to remarry than older men. And so I'm interested in the ways that that produces different kinds of tensions in those relationships.
Well, obviously you're going to continue exploring this, and I would love to have you back again to talk more about what you find. But so far in having these conversations, how does that affect how you think about growing old? What are some of your big takeaways?
For me, I think the biggest thing I've learned as I've spent time with older people is that we often think of old age as a time where things stop or where we're waiting to die. And what I've learned is that old age is a time, especially now, of innovation, of learning, and of change, that older people are incredibly creative in the ways that they forge their lives, the way that they forge relationships with people, and that it's actually a really exciting time of life.
And it can be a lengthy time of life as well. I mean, post-retirement can be 20, 25 years.
Yeah, but many, many people are, you know, even as they face bodily changes that a lot of us are afraid of, they're really living their best lives. They're exploring things that they didn't have time for in the past. They're contributing to their communities in all kinds of ways. Lots and lots of older people play huge roles as grandparents and contribute to both their families and communities. And so one of my hopes is that we don't think about aging as a time in which people are mostly taking care and taking time, but actually giving a lot to their world.
Well, Alana Bush, thank you so much for being here today.
Thanks again for having me. It was a pleasure.
Alana Bush is an assistant professor of anthropology at the University of Iowa and author of Staying Alive in America. We'd love to hear your thoughts this hour as we focus on growing old in Iowa. Is this part of your experience? Are you helping as your parents grow old in Iowa? We'd love to hear what your greatest concerns are and also what makes Iowa a good place to grow old. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And of course, aging brings with it many challenges. And many of the growing problems that we talked about this week during Iowa Week affect older people as well in really significant ways. So lack of access to health care and mental health care, just to name a couple. John Hale, along with his wife Terry, owns and operates the Hale Group in Ankeny based on consulting, and it's an advocacy firm. And he focuses on the issues of older Iowans. John is with me now. Hello, John.
Good morning, Charity. Good morning, Iowa.
And well, thank you so much for being here today. And We're going to focus on some of the big challenges right now. You published an editorial this summer saying older Iowans are not a priority in this state. But here we are in a state where a significant portion of our population is aging. What led you to say that? Why do you think older Iowans are not a priority in Iowa?
Charity, I've been focused on aging and caregiving issues for the last decade. I spend a lot of time talking to Iowans. I spend a lot of time listening to Iowans. I spend a lot of time in the public policy arena, do lobbying at the State House. So when I wrote that piece and a follow-up piece that was published in newspapers across the state, it came with a great deal of history and a great deal of perspective. It was not an opinion piece that I liked writing. But it was an opinion piece that I felt it was necessary to write. And the reaction to that piece has been the most interesting part of it. The piece was interesting, but the reaction was even more interesting. The basic premise of both pieces was that if you're an older Iowan, you're not a priority. I expected to get a lot of pushback on that. I expected to hear from elected representatives. I expected to hear from organizations. I expected to hear from people and families that would simply tell me, you know, John, you've missed something here. You're wrong. Here's this, and this that you failed to address. You just don't have the full picture. I am sorry to tell you that I heard from absolutely no one in Iowa who disagreed with the basic premise that I laid out. I heard from no elected representatives. I heard from no representatives of government in any way, shape, or form that disagreed with the basic premise.
And this is not a party issue. You don't feel like this breaks down along party lines?
No. You know, I've been in this arena for 10 years. I've worked with Republicans. I've worked with Democrats. I've during that period of time, we've had Democratic governors. We've had Republican governors. The reality is that in Iowa, older Iowans are recognized, but the issues of older Iowans are not being given serious attention. That's been the case under Republicans. It's been the case under Democrats.
It's fascinating because obviously older Iowans are a very significant part of the voter population in Iowa.
Charity, it's mind-boggling to me. I mean, it is literally mind-boggling to me. I wish I was a sociologist or a psychologist or an anthropologist that could put this in its perspective. But it is simply mind-boggling to me.
All right. Well, let's talk specifically about some of the things that you have seen that led you to the conclusion that older Iowans are not a priority. What are some of those issues?
The basic premise that I laid out, Charity, was that it really doesn't matter what your elected representatives say. It really doesn't matter what people in organizations say about the issues and the challenges of older Iowans. What matters, the only thing that matters, is what they do. And in the context of politics and in the context of elected representatives, the only thing that really matters is how they vote, and particularly how they vote on budgets. What kind of monies do they allocate for what? And when you look at the trend lines, when you look at the history, when you look at current events, you see budgets that impact older Iowans being consistently reduced. Fewer and fewer dollars available for a growing number of Iowans who are getting older. So we've got this weird dichotomy. We've got more and more people getting older, and we're cutting the budgets for services and supports for those people who are growing older. That's where the disconnect is.
All right. And so let's talk about the impact, because, I mean, cutting budgets is one thing. Seeing a decrease in services is another thing entirely. So one of the places that you feel there's been a real lack of funding is in elder abuse initiatives. Why is that such a concern?
Oh, my gosh, Charity. I mean, this is just almost bizarre, where you see budgets being reduced for offices like the Long-Term Care Ombudsman, for example. There's an office in Iowa called the Office of Long-Term Care Ombudsman, and their sole purpose is to visit people in nursing facilities to identify at an early stage if there are problems in the quality of care, in the concerns of the resident or the resident's families, identify those things at an early age and try to address them at an early age so it doesn't get worse. That's a really important service, a horribly valuable service. But what the legislature did, and the result of what the legislature did, was to cut the budgets. And as a result, the people that do that work, there are 8 of those in Iowa, which aren't very many to begin with, to visit 400 and some nursing homes. But there are 8 of them And as a result of the budget cuts, they've been told that they can no longer travel to these facilities, to see people, to walk into facilities, to see, to listen, to smell, to taste, to just appreciate what's going on. So they've been tethered to their desks, for lack of better phraseology, and they're dealing with people by telephone. And it's kind of like one person said across in another part of Iowa when they heard this, it's kind of like having your police force just sitting in the office waiting for somebody to call and trying to take care of their problem over the phone. It simply doesn't work. It's not right. And it is a classic indication of what happens when legislators cut budgets indiscriminately.
And, of course, this is an incredibly vulnerable population. I think that bears repeating, because this is not necessarily a situation where people can advocate for themselves if there's a problem.
Absolutely. That's why it's so important for people who are objective and who try to be caring advocates for people to be out in the nursing facilities on a regular basis just to see what's going on. And if there are problems, to identify them early and deal with them early. I think nursing homes appreciate the services of the ombudsman because they're not out there to slap them around. They're not out there to levy fines. They're out there to simply help make the quality of life better for the residents of those facilities.
Now, just a few minutes ago, we were talking about when people, of course, as they age, they do need more help. A lot of people want to age in place. They would like to have a home health care worker come to their home. But we talked about how this is a really poorly compensated field. So these are jobs that not a lot of people want to do. And even if they want to do them, they're not going to get paid very well. So what, obviously, that's a big issue as far as looking at what policy can support those workers or recruit those workers. What have you seen in Iowa along those lines?
What I've seen, Charity, is a willingness on the part of governors and elected officials to simply kick the can down the road. And I use that phraseology because it's a phrase used by a legislator last year who acknowledged the problem, who said, you know, we have been talking in Iowa. And this is from a legislator's voice, a legislator's mouth, not mine. The legislator says, you know, we've been talking about these issues of workforce, the direct care workforce, the home care aides, the certified nurse aides. We've been talking about these for well over a decade. We know the problems exist. We know we need to take action. We know we need to do something. We know the problems are getting worse. But you know what we do? And again, this is from a legislator's perspective. We simply continue to kick the can down the road. And he followed that up by saying, we've got to stop doing that. And I would certainly agree. It's well past time for the state of Iowa to view this workforce challenge as what it is. And what it is, Charity, is a real workforce crisis. Everybody who looks at this comes up with the same conclusion. This is a crisis. We simply cannot continue to do business as usual. We've got to address the problems that exist.
We also hear a lot about the sandwich generation, the
yes.
people who are caring for their children and caring for their parents at the same time. And whether or not they're still caring for children or not, caring for an older loved one is a lot of work. Of course, it can be incredibly rewarding, but it can also be extremely difficult. You feel like Iowa hasn't really addressed these family caregivers' needs either.
No, you know, this caregiving challenge it exists on both sides of the coin. It's the paid workforce on the one hand. They do about 20% of the services and supports for older Iowans. The other 80 to 90% is provided by family caregivers. It's interesting, Jerry, that my wife and I, Terry and I, were just up in Fort Dodge yesterday talking about this issue with about 40 representatives of employers up in Fort Dodge, because they are now starting to see from an employer's perspective that this is a workforce challenge for them. They have more and more people in their workforce who are working full-time, who are also what we called yesterday moonlighting. They have a moonlighting position where they're spending 20 or 30 hours a week. They're not working at a restaurant or a bar or something to just do for extra money. What they're actually doing is they're doing the work of family caregivers, and they are getting burnt out. They are worn out. They are burnt out. It affects their ability to be productive and produce high-quality work on the job that there is their full-time job and their occupation. So the challenges of family caregivers are huge, and they are absolutely at the same level of a crisis in the paid workforce. If there's anything we could do to help Iowans and older Iowans in a public policy context, it would be to address these two things, the challenges that are faced by family caregivers and the challenges that are faced by the paid caregivers. That is indicative of what's happening in Iowa as we get older and older. You know, we do get older and older, but that doesn't necessarily mean that our lives get better and better. It can often mean that, you know, we run out of money. But like my dad said before he passed away, you know, I didn't expect to live this long. I'm outliving my money. And there's a lot of people who are in that situation in Iowa who are dealing with the financial implications of simply growing older. But you're right. The caregiving challenges are huge. They've got to become a priority because we simply have got to better serve older Iowans.
Well, we are going to take a short break here, but before we do that, I want to get to the phones. Wilma's on the line in Iowa City with just some thoughts about aging in Iowa. Hi, Wilma.
Hi.
What's your observation?
When I want to start a conversation with somebody or make friends, if I go to the senior center or if I go to pathways, places like that, people in Iowa, I grew up on the East Coast where everybody talks to everybody automatically. You don't need a formal invitation or introduction. But I go there and nobody will talk to me. The only small talk I have is, hello, how are you? And then I'm ready for a real conversation. But the person who is sort of managing things there, they should know the people well enough to, oh, you're interested in such and such. I want to introduce you to such and such.
Well, Wilma, we're coming up on a break here, so I need to let you go. But the problem is you're having a hard time making those connections, and we'll talk about that. That can be a real challenge for people, no matter where they live. Wilma, thank you so much for your call. With me, John Hale of the Hale Group in Ankeny. We'll continue our conversation about growing old in Iowa in a moment. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. This hour, we're talking about growing old in Iowa as Iowa Week continues. We'd love to hear your thoughts. If this is part of your experience, what do you think some of the unique challenges we face here in Iowa are as so much of our population is growing older? What are some of the great things about growing older in Iowa? You can give us a call, 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. With me, John Hale, who is with the Hale Group in Ankeny. It's a consulting and advocacy firm. He focuses on aging and caregiving issues. And we're going to find out about an interesting group in just a moment. But I do want to get back to the phones, and we'd love to hear from you at 866-780-9100. Tweet us at IPR Talk or send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Kathy is on the line in Nevada. Hi, Kathy.
Hi, Charity. I wanted to tell you about my parents who are in their mid-80s now, and over 10 years ago, they chose to move from Kansas City to Ames to be closer to me and my husband so that we can care for them.
That's so interesting because a lot of older people are faced with the issue of moving into an assisted care facility or something like that, moving closer to you so that you could help with that care. Do you think that's created some challenges for them as far as developing close relationships in Iowa?
To a certain extent, yes. But they have lived in a number of places and have traveled a lot, so they have friends all over. And some of those friends have traveled to see them. Their biggest complaint was that it was hard to make friends. And they, like the woman before, said that it is difficult for older people to sometimes find new friends when they move to the state of Iowa.
But also being close to you, being close to your children as well has been great for them, I can imagine.
Yes, they have 5 great-grandchildren that are in the Des Moines area, and they get to see them on a regular basis. Joe has a brother and sister-in-law in Ames, and they've taken them under their wings, and Mom thinks of Joe or Bob as another son-in-law. Bob and Rita are always willing to help us if we need it. We're able to attend medical appointments with my parents very easily. We were able to find a trusted person to clean their house twice a month. It's been really nice to know that we don't have to worry about those types of things. They're included in a lot of family activities, so things that they would not be able to do if they were still living in Kansas City.
And does it make you feel and make them feel like you are equal partners in their care as they're growing older?
I think so, yes. It's an interesting situation to be in. You try not to feel like you're parenting your parents, but it does feel like that sometimes. But at the same time, I think about how I'm going to be when I get to be their age and think about how I want to do things and make things easier for my own kids at that point.
Well, Kathy, thank you so much for sharing your experience. You're welcome to join our conversation. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. And we've talked about some of the real challenges and the growing problems in Iowa as our population ages. Of course, that also means the more Iowans are looking for solutions to make aging a little bit easier. And an innovative idea in Johnson County is called Trail of Johnson County. It's a nonprofit designed to help older adults live and age safely and comfortably in their homes. TRAIL stands for Tools and Resources for Active Independent Living. Hillary Raymaker is Executive Director of TRAIL of Johnson County. Hi, Hillary.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Well, thank you so much for being here. Tell me what the idea behind TRAIL is.
So we know a lot of people want to stay in their homes as long as they possibly can. There's a real comfort in having your own things and in being in the place that you might have raised your children and that you feel comfortable staying. We also know that some things that as we grow older, things become harder in the house. So we hear from a lot of members like climbing up on ladders is no longer a possibility. So when you need that light bulb change, that becomes a real issue. Many people don't want to call a handyman for something as simple as maybe changing a battery that's chirping in your smoke detector.
Right.
And these are real challenges for people that may lead them to a decision where they feel like they need to move to independent living or assisted living. And for people that aren't quite ready for that step, we hope that TRAIL can be a good option for these people.
All right. And while this is a local nonprofit, this is part of a national movement.
It is. We are part of the Village to Village Network. There are about 200 villages nationally. It started in the Beacon Hill area in Boston about 15 years ago. And the idea behind this movement is that communities are taking care of their older adults. And it really becomes a community. We're hoping to integrate, you know, multi-generationally. Here in Johnson County, we have volunteers and members of all ages that want to be part of this movement and help out when they can.
So tell me how that works. Let's say I'm an older Iowan and I have a light bulb that burned out and I'm afraid to get up on that ladder. What happens? What do I do?
Absolutely. So first, you become a member of TRAIL. And once you're a member of TRAIL, you simply give our office a call. Tell us what the problem is and how we can help. TRAIL would then find a volunteer and send them out to your home. Our volunteers all go through an extensive training process. They pass a background check. And if they're driving on behalf of TRAIL, they pass a motor vehicle check. So we've vetted these people and you can feel comfortable letting them into your homes. And we know that a lot of volunteers and members are also forming relationships, which we know is really important. As you're at home, sometimes it becomes harder to get out and see people. And so a volunteer would come over and help you out with your task. There's no fee associated with that. Your membership takes care of any of those volunteer tasks that you had asked for.
So how do you recruit volunteers? What do you say to people to get them to think, yeah, I want to give some of my time and energy to this?
Right. That's a good question. We've got about 35 people who are already associated with TRAIL, and we've only been open for about 6 months. So we think that's a great number. These are community members. Some are still working. Some are retired from all professions. And the reason I hear most often is that they know that they're currently able-bodied and pretty active, but that they really hope that TRAIL is around in 5 or 10 years when they need it. It's a little bit of a karma thing, I think. And people also really just want to plug in with a certain amount of or with a subgroup of Iowans that you don't always get to speak with, especially for older Iowans who don't drive anymore. That can be really isolating to be at home and not feel like you have the access or the freedom to go where you'd like to. We have members right right now we have members in Coralville who call almost weekly and get rides to their eye appointments or their physical therapy appointments. And for them, it's really a freedom thing. We know that even if you've got adult children at home, sometimes it's hard to work around schedules, especially with children that work. So it really provides a good amount of freedom for people to say, yeah, I can make an appointment, and then I know that Trail will provide a driver and take me there, walk me through the door, and get me home safely.
This is an email from Doug. He said, I'm a 64-year-old living on less than $1,000 a month in a small town in northwest Iowa. I moved back here 3 years ago after attending high school here and leaving in 1970. I'm quite comfortable and content, except for two things. One, it's hard to make friends in small towns, and two, there are no cultural opportunities here for me. So I want to bring up that first one because Wilma talked about that. Kathy talked about her parents having a hard time making friends. And it sounds like Trail, part of the mission is not just to get those light bulbs changed and the batteries changed, but to help make those human connections. I mean, this is a really big challenge for older Iowans.
Absolutely. So we have a series of programs that we put on. Some of them are educational. We have upcoming events probably in the next few months looking at universal design, so older adults that want to stay at home and need to make some home adaptations that need to do it. We also just have social events. So some of my favorites are morning coffees in members' homes, and we might have 10 people sitting around having a coffee and just chatting. And really, those are where those meaningful relationships are formed. The other great thing is for our full members, we can pick you up, drive you to those events, and then bring you home. So for a lot of people, that becomes a really important part of their social calendar.
Well, and I can imagine, not to put words in Doug's mouth here, but in a small town in northwest Iowa, I can imagine him thinking, well, of course, that's happening in Iowa City, where there's all these amenities anyway. What about those of us in rural Iowa? And I'm curious, because this nonprofit started up 6 months ago. Are you seeing in the national movement, are you seeing this as a movement that can be replicated in a rural area?
Absolutely. What's been interesting is that the beginnings of the village-to-village movement have really happened on the coasts. There's quite a few on the East Coast, and then in California, there's almost 40 villages just in California alone. But we know that it's a really possible model to work in rural communities. There's one great one in the Cape Cod area that serves rural villages up in Cape Cod and drives people into the big cities for their medical appointments and things. We're hoping at Trail that other areas in Iowa will look to us as a model, and we're happy to help out as people think about this and hope to start. I know I've heard from groups in Linn County that are interested in starting, and also heard from a group of students, actually, who are looking at starting a village in the Mason City area. We're happy to help out if people want to ask us questions about how we get started. For us, it was about a two-year process. It was really a passion project for a group of our board of directors getting this launched, and we've just been so happy with the response from our community in the last 6 months.
Well, and in looking for volunteers, I know you said you wanted it to be multi-generational. How young is too young to get involved?
Probably 18.
Okay.
And we do have members in their 20s, which I think is fascinating. People that have these busy, active lives working full time. And I heard from one volunteer who said, you know, I don't think I'll have children, but I see some of my neighbors struggling and I really want to help out. And I think that's so admirable. And she's having a great time with it.
Well, stay with us. We've been talking about Trail of Iowa City, a new nonprofit, relatively new nonprofit designed to help older adults live and age safely and comfortably in their homes. Hillary Raymaker is executive director of Trail of Johnson County. Also, of course, still with me, John Hale of the Hale Group in Ankeny. And we're hearing from a lot of people who have stories that they want to share. And here's a comment from Meta. She says, John Hale is addressing real issues regarding aging in Iowa. I'm 75. Three things concern me. One, the issue of transportation when we no longer should drive. Two, lack of housing when we want to downsize. Other states have over 55 housing, which is cost effective and allows us to stay in our communities. Three, poverty, which often affects women as we're not monetarily rewarded for years of raising children. I mean, John, those are some really serious issues that a lot of people face.
You know, they are really serious issues, and I would totally agree with Meta. I hear this from people all over the state of Iowa, particularly in rural areas. Issues of transportation, issues of housing, issues of lack of income, poverty, inability to meet fundamental needs. These are really serious problems, and sadly, they're prevalent in too many places across the state. It's just an indication of how we just need a much more serious focus on and a greater priority to these issues that affect older Iowans. And I hope we're going to get there. And I'm heartened by listening to Hillary and the approach that Johnson County is taking. You know, Johnson County's always had the reputation of being a leader on a host of issues. And I think we're going to have more local leadership to address local problems because we simply aren't seeing it.
Right. I want to point out, though, that, I mean, this is a volunteer-driven effort. This is not a government-driven effort. And so that's what you're saying is the government is not doing this in Iowa. It feels like it's up to us.
Well, I hate to say this, but the federal government and the state government has been AWOL on these issues affecting older Iowans for far too long. And because they've been AWOL, it falls to local communities, local charities, local philanthropies, local leaders to say, you know, because we're not seeing this leadership from anywhere else, maybe it's time, maybe we're going to have to step up to address these issues at the local level, find the solutions locally, find the money locally, find the people resources locally to help make life a little bit better.
Here's a comment from Dan, just to give kudos to an organization he feels is doing a lot of good. He says, Iowa has something special that very few states have for helping aging veterans. The Iowa Veterans Home in Marshalltown, one of the finest facilities to help Iowa veterans and their spouses live out their final years in a safe and caring place. I want to get back to the phones as well. Tammy's on the line in Washington. Hi, Tammy.
Hello.
Hi. What would you like to talk about?
Well, I'd like to go back to talking about the sandwich generation. I'm 45 years old, and I have a husband who is in kidney failure and has required dialysis 3 times a week. I'm the oldest child, so I have responsibility with my aging parents. My father no longer drives. My parents need help with things from time to time as other people have shared. And I also have a daughter who's in her 20s who still needs the support of her mother to become a successful adult. And I'm just wondering if anybody, and I don't get any support from anyone with my husband. His family has basically turned their back on us. So I get no support in helping with his needs, which are monumental. And one of my thoughts that is not addressed is this overwhelming stress that's put on caregivers and how detrimental it is going to be to our health in the long run.
Well, Tammy, thank you so much for calling. And I mean, it sounds like more than sandwiched in your case. I'm so sorry that you're dealing with all of these challenges and all of these challenges at the same time. But John, I mean, that's not an unusual story, is it?
You know, it's not, Charity, and my wife has a wonderful way of phrasing that. She calls it the club sandwich generation because there are multiple layers. The sandwich generation is typically talking about taking care of kids and taking care of parents. But as the caller pointed out, there are so many layers to this. You can be dealing with challenges of helping parents. You can have a spouse with some challenges. You can have your own kids with challenges. You can have grandkids that you're also dealing with. And then you have a full-time job on top of that that you need to have to for income purposes. It becomes unbelievably difficult, and people just get overwhelmed. And we need to spend so much more time and effort focused on the challenges that family caregivers had, because as a caller pointed out, my gosh, this is difficult, and people literally just go crazy trying to juggle all these balls that they're trying to juggle and keep the ship afloat.
I am struck this hour as we've talked about challenges. The thing that we keep hearing from individuals who are living this story, though, is this challenge of isolation, this challenge of loneliness. And I know that with Trail, of course, you're helping with a lot of other things. But Hillary, is that your experience as well, that the challenge of isolation may be the greatest? list.
Yeah, perhaps. We have a lot of people that would normally not leave the house. And if it were not for trail and the transportation services, you know, a lot of their day is simply just spent at home. And so for us to be able to offer some freedom, to be able to get out, run errands, go to appointments, see friends, that's really gratifying for us.
Well, Hillary Raymaker, the executive director of Trail of Johnson County, thank you so much for being here.
Thanks, Charity.
And John Hale, thank you for taking the time to talk with us today.
Thanks, Charity. Let's do this again.
All right. John Hale of the Hale Group in Ankeny. It's a consulting and advocacy firm, and he focuses on aging and caregiving issues. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. We'll conclude Iowa Week tomorrow with a focus on growing up in Iowa. I'm Charity Nebbe.